from KQED.
Welcome back to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Uber and Lyft drivers in San Francisco and eight other cities will stage a one-day strike tomorrow ahead of Uber's long-anticipated IPO on Friday, which is expected to raise about $9 billion. But drivers say they're not sharing in the wealth. They say their wages and working conditions are getting worse, and drivers are turning off their apps for the day, and they're encouraging riders to do the same. Joining us to discuss the strike and the IPO are Sam Harnett. He's a Silicon Valley reporter for KQED, and he's here with us in studio. Sam, welcome.
Yeah, nice to be here as always.
Always nice to have you here. We also have Kate Conger with us online here, technology reporter for The New York Times. And Kate, welcome back to Forum. Good to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Sam, let's talk to you first about what's happening here. I mean, the timing can't be
It's not a mistake.
Before this IPO, so you can almost expect this, but What do you think is going to happen here? I'm not asking you to be prescient, but I mean, first of all, not only with the drivers, but are people going to turn their apps off?
Well, here's the problem, right? Unlike workers in other industries, any gig worker can just sign onto this app if they want to, right? So I think it's really hard to organize a strike where you get everybody on board. I mean, in the Bay Area alone, there are tens of thousands of people who are signed up to drive on Uber and Lyft. So getting all of them to agree not to sign on and do some rides is going to be really difficult, especially when you consider that Uber has surge pricing. So let's say a lot of drivers decide not to drive, and then other drivers see, hey, the rates are going way up and I can make more money. So it's going to be very difficult for them to orchestrate a real strike.
But they are getting support. They're getting support from politicians. Bernie Sanders come out and made a statement. I'm behind the drivers here and a number of other public figures. One wonders just how long or how far that will go.
Right. I mean, I think this has been brewing for years, this discontent with drivers, and the stories have been coming out that their take home has been going down and down and down. I mean, you saw just in Los Angeles, Uber cut the rate per mile from 80 cents a mile to 60 cents a mile. Now, at the same time, they did increase what drivers make while they're waiting for a ride, but drivers are saying, this is one more cut in a series of cuts.
And the company has said, let me go to you on this, Kate, they've lost about $1.1 billion in the first 3 months of this year. In the same period a year earlier, Uber had a $3.7 billion profit. So how is this going to affect the IPO offerings, do you think?
Well, I think so. The profit that you mentioned was sort of a strange blip for them. They had sold off some of their businesses overseas and so turned a profit. But, the company is generally unprofitable, and I think investors are expecting that. They're not expecting to see a profit from the company. In terms of how much the strike will affect the IPO, it's hard to predict. I think Sam raises a really good point that there will be financial incentives for drivers to break the strike. There will be surge pricing. I think Uber also knows that driver satisfaction is a big risk to the business. And if drivers are unhappy, that creates a lot of problems for them. And they mention this in their regulatory filings for the IPO. They say if drivers are unhappy, that's going to eventually start to affect our bottom line.
Well, we're talking a lot about Uber, but IPO's price has gone about 14% below the initial price, hasn't it?
Yeah,
Lyft's IPO price has dropped significantly since they went public. That's correct.
So, in effect, Sam, you want to weigh in here. I mean, again, on the terms of what the strike is going to do or kind of impact it's going to have.
I mean, I think if you looked at Uber's IPO prospectus, one of the first things they said is that if drivers are considered employees, their business model is going to suffer. So they're really worried about workers being reclassified as employees. So I think
which is what the workers have wanted all along.
For a long time, they want stable wages, they want benefits, they want workers' comp. So this strike, I think it signifies that the workers are sort of organizing, and that could be scary to investors because if workers do succeed in pushing for employee status, it's going to be a big hit on Uber and Lyft.
Well, let's talk about the workers, and I want to get you in on this, Kate Conger, because there's been a lot of talk about being poorly treated, getting low wages. There's even talk about the wages being barely subsistence wages. But I've got a statement from Lyft, and I'd like to get your response to it. Lyft is I'm looking for the statement here. Lyft is saying, let me read this to you. This is from a spokesperson for Lyft. Lyft drivers' hourly earnings have increased over the last 2 years, and they have earned more than $10 billion on the Lyft platform. Over 75% drive less than 10 hours a week to supplement their existing jobs. On average, Lyft drivers earn over $20 per hour. We know that access to flexible extra income makes a big difference for millions of people, and we're constantly working to improve how we can best serve our driver community. It's not what you're hearing from Lyft in this strike, and it's not what you're hearing from Uber. Kate?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the truth in that statement is that there are drivers who do want the flexible schedule and don't necessarily want to be considered as employees. But what drivers do want, I think even if they are driving part-time, even if they're driving, you know, only a few hours a week, they do want the wage that will make it worth their while. And so what the drivers have been pointing to in these strikes is to say, you know, there's a recent minimum wage law that passed in New York that says drivers have to make a certain rate. And they've been looking at that and saying, you know, even if we're driving part-time, we at least want sort of a bottom line for what our wages have to be on this platform.
No, they'd also probably like gas maintenance and insurance paid for as well.
Well, that's what I'd add to that. Uber's $20 an hour estimate, that's gross, not net. So when you take into account car depreciation, the cost of gas, insurance, you know, that number goes down significantly. And then I'd also add on the issue of flexibility, I feel like a lot of the drivers I've talked to have said, in theory, there's flexibility, but it's an illusion of flexibility when you start to realize that, like, Uber offers all these incentives if you drive more to get these bonuses, and you need those bonuses to make any kind of decent wage. So you have the freedom, but you find yourself driving 30, 40, 50 hours to get these bonuses. So how free are you if you're driving that many hours?
They also had a pay cut recently.
Right. I mean, that was down in L.A. Like, they dropped it from 80 cents to 60 cents a mile. But these platforms can change the rates whenever they would like to. So let's say you decide to sign up for Uber and Lyft a couple years ago, and you buy a new car, and then all of a sudden the platform cuts the rates and you're stuck with this new car. Where's the freedom in that? So I think there's a lot of drivers who say, yeah, in principle or in theory, but in reality, not so much.
I got a response from you, Sam, and from Kate about a statement put out by Bahravi Desai. He's the executive of the Taxi Alliance.
Oh, she in New York.
She, excuse right. me. I didn't know. Yeah. Yep. She says, Wall Street investors are telling Uber and Lyft to essentially cut down on driver income, to stop incentives, to go farther in getting driverless cars. In other words, she's suggesting all this is being dictated by New York and Wall Street.
Right. Maybe to weigh in first, like, you've seen they've cut into drivers seems pretty much as far as they could go. Like, I don't know how much lower they can go in that regard, and they're still losing money. So then the question is, do they start raising rates on consumers, which consumers might not be happy with? And then you have the whole driverless car thing, which we've been telling has been around the corner, but it doesn't seem to be coming anytime soon. That also seemed like a bit of illusion. So yeah, I feel like, I don't know, Kate, you can weigh in, but it feels like these companies are in a bit of a tricky spot right now.
Kate?
Yeah, I think, you know, no matter what path they choose to take to try to become profitable, it doesn't look great for drivers. I think I'm trying to pull it up right now, but there's a Wall Street Analyst report that I was reading recently, you know, that talked about a couple of the different strategies they could take. And, you know, one is cutting driver pay. One is cutting back on their insurance costs. One is, you know, the more rapid development of self-driving cars. So there are a number of options that they can take, but, you know, in none of those circumstances does it seem to play out well in the long term for the driver base.
Well, let's hear from you, our listeners, about this. Are you sympathetic to the drivers, and do you want to weigh in on what you think about the strike? And particularly those of you who have an app, will you indeed not call Uber or Lyft? Uber, Lyft, and Lyft drivers in San Francisco are turning off their apps for the day, and they encourage riders to do the same. If you're a driver or a rider, are you planning to participate in the strike? We want to hear from you, and you can join us now and let us know your thoughts. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so feel free to be part of the program. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786, or join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website at kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I'd like to know your thoughts about Uber and Lyft drivers going on strike tomorrow, and that's, of course, right ahead of the Uber IPO. Kate Conger with us by phone here, technology reporter for The New York Times, and Sam Harnett in studio with us, Silicon Valley reporter with KQED. And let's talk also about a lot of these complaints that have been coming in, Sam. I mean, there is a concern maybe about regulation playing its way into this whole
Yeah, I mean, Uber and Lyft have been very successful from the beginning. You know, critics say that these companies really that it wasn't a technology it invented. That is really they succeeded because of regulatory arbitrage, which is basically they said, okay, we have these rules regulating taxis in all these cities, but we'll make an app and we don't really care. And that has been a big part of what has given them a leg up and got a lot of the initial investment capital. So regulations in terms of I think the biggest scare for these companies is regulations in terms of employee status. Again, if drivers were made employees, that would be a big hit on these companies.
But if they keep pushing for a greater share of the driver's money, that could bring on regulations was what I was suggesting, and or could bring on minimum wage or demand for minimum wage.
Right. I mean, I think the drivers, they have been getting attention about their plight. I mean, you hear stories of drivers who are in the Bay Area who are sleeping in their cars. You see a lot of drivers now, or I've talked to a lot of drivers who drive in from as far away as Modesto to drive here on the weekends. And you're starting to hear those stories, and I think they're resonating with some of the consumers. At the same time, it's so easy, right? So I am very skeptical that many consumers, they might, you know, post on Facebook or Twitter, like, hey, I'm not going to use the app. I'm tied with the drivers, but they need to get somewhere on time. They just take out their phone, you know.
Good point. Convenience often rules. Let me go to you with a question from a listener, Kate Gurr. This is William, who writes, I truly don't understand the economics of ride-sharing companies. Billions in losses, yet Wall Street valuations in the three-digit billions. This business model reeks of labor exploitation, and the investment is already stale.
Right. So the way that these companies are valued, I think, can seem sort of absurd, especially, you know, to folks like me that, you know, we only deal with money and whether or not there's money in our checking account or not. But the way that Wall Street is looking at this is on this very long-term plan, and they're kind of looking at Uber and Lyft like social media companies almost. Mm-hmm. And they think as long as these companies are growing in users, as long as there's more and more riders who are on the platform, eventually that math is going to level out and they're going to make money. And you can look sort of as a comparison to Twitter. You know, they went public in 2013, and then they didn't become profitable until 2018. So you had this five-year gap where they were just losing money and losing money and losing money, and now they're finally turning that around. And it seems like investors are much more comfortable with that kind of long-term loss than, you know, an average consumer would be if they were thinking, oh, I'm losing so much of my own personal money every day.
There's also been criticism about hiring more and more drivers, which means sometimes, in many cases, less money for the drivers who are already behind the wheel. Here's a listener who writes, San Francisco riders, download the Flywheel app and take a cab during a strike. It has all the features of the ride-hailing companies, and you'll help cab drivers whose business has been decimated by the unregulated ride-hailing companies. Let's go to our callers, and let's begin with you, Beth. Seth, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. So I am someone who drives for Lyft, and I guess I have a couple questions that I wanted to bring up. One question is, what are these companies doing that their overhead is so high that they're not making a profit? Because, you know, from my point of view as someone who drives, it seems like it should almost be pure profit. And my second thought I just wanted to get in real quick is, what is going on that, you know, or why aren't we talking more about putting a cap on how much these companies can take from a total ride fee? And so that's my question. Thanks.
Thank you for those, Sam Harnett.
Well, sounds like you're talking about regulation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and to get back to the previous point about Flywheel, the reason Flywheel doesn't work is because there's a cap on how many taxis you can have on the street. And if you can't flood the market with your Ubers and Lyfts, then you can't offer a ride super cheap and super quick. So really what it gets down to is some kind of regulatory scheme if you want to ensure a certain amount of wages for the drivers.
Right. And, the way that regulation has gone down so far, New York has looked at this minimum wage approach. In California right now, you know, the California Supreme Court recently had this decision in Dynamics where they kind of came out with a decision that makes it seem as though drivers should be classified as employees rather than independent contractors. And obviously that makes, you know, companies like Uber and Lyft very nervous. And they're kind of trying to sort out what the regulatory answer will be. So I expect that we're going to see that coming up in the next couple of months.
But there are.
I just wanted to go back to Seth's original question about the overhead.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's a lot of cost involved. Some of it is significant engineering costs to hire all the people that are building the app. And then a lot of it goes into some of the other investments that are being made, for instance, in building self-driving cars. That's an enormously expensive project, and both Lyft and Uber are putting a lot of money into that, where, you know, if they decided to not pursue an autonomous approach, maybe they would have much more money on their balance sheet.
And there are sustainability concerns with all these massive losses, Kate?
Are there sustainability concerns? Do you mean environmental concerns or just how long can the business be sustainable?
Yeah, I mean the latter. How long can the business sustain itself with all these massive losses?
I think that it seems to me that investors are pretty unconcerned about that. I think, you know, there's so much private investment that has been flooded into these companies for so long, and I think investors are very used to the idea that they are going to have to wait years and years and years before they start seeing profits from tech companies, that they're pretty comfortable with the approach.
Again, we're talking about the Uber and Lyft driver strike, which is slated for tomorrow, and Uber's highly anticipated IPO, which is slated for Friday, with Sam Harnett, Silicon Valley reporter for KQED, and Kate Conger, technology reporter for The New York Times. Here's another caller, and that's Jimmy. You're on the air. Good morning.
Aloha. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'm a San Francisco resident. I've been driving for both Lyft and Uber for a few years now, slowly seeing the rates go down, 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 with more smaller incentives going up. Like they want to offer, 1.5% off on gas. And, if you've done maybe 5,000 rides, then they'll help you with schooling online. But people can't do those type of things with feeding their families. They need, the money. We need that cash to pay rent, not 1.5% off on gas.
That kind of incentive is, again, a subtle form of control, which eats into the freedom, right? If you have to drive extra to make that little incentive, then how free are you to decide when you drive and how?
Yeah, I appreciate the call from you, Jimmy. Thank you. Tim writes, I have always known these gig economy companies are simply a capitalistic race to the bottom. I have never ridden in any of their cars, let alone downloaded the app. And here we'll go to another caller here. That's you, Raphael. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a Lyft driver in the Bay Area, and I just have a comment about how hard it is to, find bathrooms. If you get if you go to an airport and try and get a ride, which are pretty, relatively lucrative because they're longer, and, it's all about the time you have a passenger in the car. But if you wait at the airport, there's no bathrooms. Yeah. It's San Jose one. It's San Francisco, which is this foul porta potty that's just covered in pee everywhere. It's really, it's kind of gross and terrible.
I mean, back in the days of taxis, they had, little hubs where taxi drivers would go pick up their car, maybe relieve themselves. I mean, again, you're looking at this totally private system versus a system that's slightly regulated. And actually, to follow up on one of Kate's points about the investment and what investors are banking on, I think really the bet that investors are making are, listen, consumers love this. It's established. If that happens, we're betting that it's not going to be regulated and it's not going to be shut down because they're just assuming that we're going to side with consumers and what consumers want are cheap, fast rides.
And Kate Conger, a listener, says, I believe this is correct. I had heard that Lyft offered drivers who have been with the company a while bonuses after the IPO. Is that true? They've actually offered them, to buy in, too, as well, haven't they?
Right. Yeah, so Uber and Lyft have both done these sort of driver incentive programs pegged to the IPO, where they're giving drivers cash bonuses based on the number of rides that they've done over time. And they can either take the cash and just keep it, or they can use the cash to buy shares in the company at the IPO price. And I've talked to some drivers about this who have taken advantage of the program. Some of them really like it, and they're really excited that they get to sort of participate as an investor. Some of them feel like the bonuses just aren't significant enough. I talked to a Lyft driver yesterday who said, she had done 13,000 rides. She got a $1,000 bonus, and, she was making the point that, she used to be able to make $1,000 just in some of the other incentives that one of the drivers who called in earlier, Jimmy, was mentioning. Now those incentives have dropped, and she feels like, a $1,000 bonus for the 13,000 rides that I've done, how is that fair compensation?
Yeah, what's the math on that? Is that 13 cents a ride, or is that right? No, okay.
Well, you see, actually, I think you were talking about L.A. before. It's now about some figure about 60 cents a ride.
Right.
Let me get another caller aboard here, though, and that's Eric. Eric, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I've been driving Lyft part-time for about a year, and I'm going to turn off my app, and hopefully I'll never turn it back on. Because one of the things I've noticed is that there's a lot more cars on the road because the Lyft rides are so cheap that people aren't taking public transportation. I'm taking people along BART rides all the time, along BART rides. And I can't get behind it. I think it's ultimately bad for society because the rides are just too cheap. If you're paying $25 to get from Oakland to San Francisco, it's so much better than crammed into a BART. So I think it's ultimately a bad thing.
That driver brings up an interesting point, is that there's competition between public transport and Uber and Lyft. I mean, Uber and Lyft sort of envision themselves as part of the urban transportation system, but of course, Muni, BART, those are regulated, and Uber and Lyft are private.
But the ones they really compete with are the cab drivers.
I don't know how much of a competition it is anymore. I mean, it's been taxi drivers have a capped amount of cars they can put on a road, and they have set rates.
And here's Olivia who writes, let me go to you on this, Kate Conger. After driving 6 months, I came to the conclusion that Uber and Lyft are a scam. They go for profits ASAP and wait for the government and society at large to hold them accountable.
Yeah, I think that brings up a lot of the frustrations that the drivers have had. I think, there is a strong pitch to drivers of the flexibility that they'll have, the wages that they'll make. And not all of them find that to be true. And so I think, a lot of that frustration is starting to bubble up. One of the interesting things that I know Wall Street is interested in, and we haven't really seen yet from either Uber or Lyft, is any kind of statistics on their churn rate for drivers. So how often drivers pick up the app, start driving, and decide, you know what, this sucks, it's not for me. Because there is the theory that eventually they could run out of people who are willing to drive, who've tried it, haven't liked it for whatever reason and don't want to come back to the platform.
Right. Churn through everyone who would possibly want to drive. I just wanted to add that I think the whole gig economy rise, like all of these part-time app companies, they really coincided with the post-financial recession and the evolution of the smartphone. And I think they really show that there's a lot of people who are desperate for extra income.
Well, again, we're talking about the Uber and Lyft driver strike with Sam Harnett and Kate Conger, and the strike is slated for tomorrow, and Uber's highly anticipated IPO is slated for Friday. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny, and we'll go to more of your calls. Let's go to a caller in Redwood City. That's Myra. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody?
I think we're holding up okay. Thank you.
Wonderful. So I just wanted to kind of address another problem with Lyft and Uber and how they support their workers. So to keep a long story short, my really good friend who's a full-time student worked for Lyft and Uber full-time to support herself while she's out here. She's from Southern California and her friends are her support system. She ended up picking a rider who had committed a crime. And her car was impounded for almost 6 weeks. She was stuck with legal fees and impoundment fees upwards of $6,000. And, trying to work with Lyft, they offered her no legal help to get her car back. She ended up contacting an assemblyman in San Mateo to help her contact the inspector so he can subpoena Lyft to get the rider information. But she was left with no car, and she would have been homeless if it wasn't for her support system.
This is a sad story you're relating here, Myra.
Yeah, and I think it does point to a bigger issue, which is, when you have a problem with Uber and Lyft, you often call in to talk with someone who can help you. A lot of the people who are working at Uber and Lyft, taking calls, trying to do support, are actually contract workers who maybe haven't been at the company that long. So there really is, like, one of the central frustrations drivers have is that there isn't a really good way when you have a problem to get help. Because they, and again, Uber and Lyft, they view themselves as platforms that
connect. They say they're private contractors too. I mean, that's the thing that they fall back on constantly.
Right. That you as a driver are running your own business, and we're providing you a platform to connect you with riders. I mean, that's their official business model.
Myra, I hope the best for your friend, and I thank you for the call. Here's a listener who writes, isn't this for a supplemental income, not a career path? If you're not happy with the company, find another job.
Well, it's hard to find another job in this economy, no? I think that's, again, a lot of the drivers wish they could do something else.
Let me read another comment from a listener. It says, why would people drive for Uber if they do not make money? Can some Uber drivers call in and tell us? Well, we're here. I mean, you've heard from a number of them, Sam, and it's difficult out there.
Oh, it's desperation. Again, when Uber and Lyft started, you noticed that there were a lot of drivers who were aspiring musicians and artists, and frankly, a lot of the drivers were white in the beginning. And now you're seeing the drivers shift. There's a lot of immigrants. There are a lot of people supporting families. They're not doing this because they want to become an actor or a musician. They're doing this because they can't get a job in Modesto that provides a decent wage or wherever they're living. So they're doing this out of desperation.
Here's Steve. I'm sorry. Let me go to UK Conger. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think one of the issues with Uber and Lyft that you see for drivers is that the incentives and the pay will change a lot. So, you know, they can have weeks of driving where it is very lucrative and they're meeting some bonus rate where they get a big bonus and, you know, they can go into that and say, oh, look, I made so much money this week. This is a great job for me. I want to keep doing it. And then weeks and months go by and they realize, you know, oh, my rate has been cut or the incentives have changed. I can't actually make the money that I thought I was making. But in the meantime, and I think Sam mentioned this earlier, some of them have bought new cars, they've taken on car loans, they have maintenance that they need to do for the vehicle. And so at that point, they're kind of stuck in this cycle where they need to keep doing it just to meet those expenses that they've signed themselves up for.
And Steve is also wanting to address this supposed part-time jobs. Steve, go ahead.
My understanding, I mean, I live out in the Richmond and Sunset District here in the city, which is, I think, one of the reasons why these companies kind of came into being, because trying to get a cab out here back in the day was impossible. But my understanding, one of the things I liked about it, too, was that this was always like a part-time job and supplemental. And for the speaker, when the speaker talks about drivers coming in here from Modesto and from other places, that's the problem. You have guys coming in here that don't know the city. They're driving around trying to navigate the city, trying to navigate the app, and then trying to talk to somebody. And that's creating that. For me personally, that creates a problem because now you got people driving around that don't know where they're going or how to get to where they're trying to go without the app. Now they got to pay attention to two or three things at the same time.
No, I think Steve's point's well taken, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. Total free market. I mean, they want the idea that anyone should be able to come and do this work leads to everyone coming and trying to do this work, and then you get driver versus driver.
And that's sometimes pretty cutthroat and shark-like. Time for one more caller. Che, that's you. Little time left, but please, it's yours.
Yes, I think that the main part of this conversation that we're missing is redistribution. How much money are the people at the top making? And this is a huge problem with corporate United States. We need redistribution, and maybe there needs to – I do not like regulation, but maybe we need to start regulating. The people on the top cannot make more than 20%.
Well, do they, Cape Conger, make more than – they make millions at the top. Is that more than 20%? Clearly, it must be.
It's probably pretty close, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to end it there. We will be continuing to follow this story. Let me thank Sam Harnett, who's here in the studio with us, Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
And thanks, Cape Conger. Glad to have you aboard as well, technology reporter for the New York Times.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Stay tuned for more on this radio station, which is KQED, your radio station. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.